If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
And for me, what I love about winemaking is that you're taking an agricultural commodity and you're turning it into something that invokes such a thought response with people. You know, you and I just met, but we have this common bond of wine, and we could probably sit down with a couple bottles of wine and spend all night together. You know, it's really cool to have something like that to really form bonds with other people.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 501. This week we feature Lori Budd, co-owner of Dracena Wines in Paso Robles. While traveling within the wine business, you can meet the most interesting people. Example, Lori Budd. Lori and her husband Mike own Dracena Wines in Paso Robles, and I met Lori during my recent trip to the Abruzzo region of Italy. Not only is she a winemaker, but also a fellow podcaster hosting Exploring the Wine Glass. I was a guest on her show, and now I'm happy to return the favor. Winemakers tell the best stories because they have the most interesting backgrounds. You can also hear Lori on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term fining. We are back on the phone today, and we are talking to Lori Budd of Dracena Wines. And Lori Budd's, you're basically focused out of Paso Robles, is that correct?
That is correct. The majority of our fruit comes from Paso Robles. We have one wine that we make outside of Paso, but everything else is Paso-centric.
Cool. We're going to come back to that in a minute, and I should say, hey, how you doing? Nice to talk to you again.
I'm doing great. Thanks. Good to talk to you, too.
Yeah, and I should, just for our listeners, kind of give them a little bit of a clue of how we know each other and how we are so casual with each other. Lori and I were amongst a rather large group of people who were lucky enough to visit Abruzzo, Italy, and we met and managed to chat quite a bit and enjoyed our flight home together, which was really great fun, by the way.
Yeah, it made the time go quickly.
Yeah, 11 hours really amazingly flew by.
Yes.
It was such a fantastic trip, and of course, overall, the weather was beautiful. So I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes. But and by the way, I should mention that both you and your husband own the winery, and your husband's name is Michael, correct?
That is correct.
Great. I wouldn't want to get that wrong. So like many times, and you've asked this question, I'm sure, because you do your own podcast, and we'll also talk about that. How did you find your way into wine? What was your journey?
So our journey was when my husband and I first met, we were working together at a food company here in New Jersey, and I was a microbiologist, he was a food chemist, and I was responsible to make sure that the products he was trying to put on the shelf would not kill people. And that is how we met, and as we started dating, we were pretty low on the totem pole at the beginning, so didn't really have a lot of money. So a lot of our dates consisted of going to dinner where he would cook dinner at his house. Mm. And we would just go pick a bottle of wine and have dinner and conversation. And as we progressed in our careers, I like to say we were able to start to stand up on the shelves in the store. And as opposed to looking at the bottom shelf, we were able to kind of go eye level. And we started to realize that there was differences from wine to wine. Then we decided to start vacationing, and we went to some wine regions and really started to realize that they're really, you know, this is good wine versus, you know, some okay wine. And we just, you know, fell in love with, actually, we fell in love with each other over falling in love with wine.
Nice.
And we just realized that this was what we wanted to do. And so we started off with making a make wine with us type of group where they trucked fruit from California, from Lodi, California to New Jersey. Mm. And we made wine. We made wine there, and it was one of those kind of facilities where everybody's doing the same thing. but they were all getting drunk and pouring everything together, and we were sitting there pulling out all the mog, the materials other than grapes.
Sure.
And at the end, you have this big party where you share wine, and everybody was like, well, why is your wine so much better than ours? And I'm like, well, because we didn't throw mold in ours, you know?
Yeah.
And we actually kind of paid attention to what was going on during the process. And then we realized that, you know, trucking grapes is probably not the best route for it. So then we moved on to Crush Pad in San Francisco. And we made a Syrah from White Hawk Vineyard, and it was a good wine. And everybody that we, you know, gave it to thought it was a good wine. And then you start getting that little, you know, tweak in your brain saying, hey, maybe we can do this. Maybe we can do this. So we went to UC Davis to get our winemaking degree. And in 2013, we started Dracena Wine.
Amazing. It's, you know, not a totally unusual path with the idea of being involved with food, plus also, you know, your educational background. Science is a real common, you know, starting block for people in the wine business. Wouldn't you agree?
Right. Absolutely. You know, there's science. You have to have some sort of science understanding. And although it's great, everybody thinks behind the scenes of winemaking is all romantic and it's so great you have all this wine. It's a lot of chemistry. It's a lot of science to make sure that the fruit doesn't do bad things.
Right. Yes. You don't want bad things when it comes to your wine.
Right.
It's interesting, though, you know, how you come together like that. I have a couple of good friends who are winemakers who also came together in a very similar way. And wine does that. It creates friendships, as it did with you and me and a few of us from the trip. And that's probably, I think, one of the most attractive things about it, of course, other than drinking it, you know?
Yes. I love how what it does is provide a common bond for two people. And then as you enjoy the wine, I think it's a great conversation starter. And for some people who are not so, you know, out there and willing to share so much about themselves, it provides a little opening for them. And then it allows you to talk to people and get to know more things about that person other than what wine they like.
Sure. And you get to learn together, which I think is really one of the most fun parts.
Right.
So Dracena is the name of the winery, and it's a unusual name with even a more interesting spelling versus how it's pronounced. I'm going to go ahead and ask you if you would tell us, A, how you came up with that name, and B, where the name came from, or vice versa.
Sure. So Dracena is actually a genus name for a Draco tree. So there are loads of Dracenas out there, and there is a Dracena Draco. And that is what is so special to us, is that our Weimaraner, who proudly is displayed or prominently displayed on every label, his name was Draco. And he was named after the constellation of dragons.
Cool.
And we had him for 14 incredible years, which is, like, amazing for a Weimaraner.
Nice.
And when we lost him, we put a Draco tree in his spot as a memorial.
Aww.
So if you're looking at our label, Draco is standing there, and then there is a background image, and that is the image of a kind of an outline of a Draco tree.
Very sweet.
And so when we wanted to come up with the name, we wanted it to represent Draco, but us. So us being the science dorks that we are, the genus name makes sense. So Dracena, Draco, kind of both of us put together.
That's very cool. In fact, the logo under the give back section with the heart, I thought that was truly beautiful. That was one of the more unusual and original logos I've seen in a while.
Oh, why, thank you.
Yeah, I thought that was really cute. Well, you know, we often talk about the idea of starting a winery as such a daunting thing. We even, I think, kidded about that on the trip. You really got to know what you're doing. Certainly, you're going to learn from your mistakes, but mistakes can be awfully expensive sometimes.
Oh, yes.
But I mean, you know, as the crow flies, which is a terrible way to put it, you have to make those mistakes. Otherwise, you know, that's how we all learn as humans.
And thankfully, that's one of the things that's wonderful about Paso is the community. You know, I think Paso is a beautiful place, and you can get all into the geekdom of why it's so wonderful for grapes and the diurnal shifts and, you know, all the sub-AVAs and how they all interact. But what it really comes down to is the community.
Nice.
And the people there really care for each other. And when something happens in your winery, it's very easy to go knock on somebody's door and say, this happened. I don't know what to do. And the camaraderie is, all right, let's taste this. Let's see what we can do and let's help. And so we've experienced that. And in turn, we've given back to that. And that's what is one of the most phenomenal things about Paso.
Classic farming community. That's how it should be in many places.
Yes.
I think the most important conversation here, other than chatting, is to talk about the wines. And from what I'm seeing, you are making an interesting combination. You're doing rosé, you're doing Cab Franc, and you're also doing Chenin Blanc. So is this what you're doing right now? Are there other wines you're looking at? Tell me about what you're doing.
So we started off in 2013 with just one wine, and that was Cabernet Franc. And that was because we love Cabernet Franc. It is our favorite varietal. And, you know, in all honesty, there's two main reasons that we chose that. One was just pure logistics. You're coming into Paso, you're a little fish in a very big pond, and you can't, in my opinion, we couldn't come in and do a Zinfandel or a Cabernet or something like that, because there's the J. Lores of the world, there's the Ducies, there's the Tobin James.
Sure.
You know, we can't compete against those people. So we wanted to create a wine brand that we found our own niche, basically. So Cab Franc was a great option there, because there wasn't a lot of it anywhere, really, at that time. And so that was one reason. The other reason was, in complete honesty, who knew if we were going to sell the wine? You know, who was going to buy our little itty-bitty wine? And if nobody bought it, we needed a wine that we were going to want to drink.
Sure. Makes sense.
So that is how we, right? So that's how we started with Cabernet Franc. Luckily, we submitted to Wine Enthusiast, got a 91, and it wasn't so difficult to sell the wine when you get good scores. So that was where we started, was Cabernet Franc. We then created a second Cab Franc that is 100% Cabernet Franc, and that is our reserve. It's a single vineyard, single clone. You know, I know loads of winemakers say it all the time, Mother Nature in a bottle, but this truly is, you know, it comes from the vineyard and we do very little with it, and it's single cloned, and it is as Cab Franc can be, you know, of the expression for Paso. And that's our reserve, Cabernet Franc. And then when we decided to, you know, I guess really jump on the bandwagon for no other better excuse, you know, rosé was a popular thing. And nice turnaround time for as a winery. And it's perfect for summertime and warm weather. And as a winery, you need to start thinking about how can you start doing wine dinners? How can you start presenting your wine to people who might not like Cab Franc? You know, you need to start diversifying a bit. So that was where the rosé came in. And then when we wanted to expand to a white, we were thinking, and Cab Franc comes from the Loire Valley. If you're going to stick to a specific niche, and ours is the Loire Valley, the really only choice is Chenin Blanc. So we went with Chenin Blanc, and that's the only wine that we do produce outside of Paso, because for our palate, Paso isn't ideal for Chenin Blanc. It's got calcareous soil versus silt soil.
Sure.
The temperature, although we have that diurnal shift, just isn't really what Chenin Blanc likes. We want to go where the fruit is excellent. So Jancis Robinson, says that if you pull the Loire Valley out of France and put it into California, it is Clarksburg.
Hmm.
Who would have known?
Yeah, really.
So we started, I figured if Jantis Robinson says that, we can research that.
I would agree.
So we started looking into Clarksburg, and lo and behold, it really is very similar characteristics to the Loire Valley. So we started hunting in Clarksburg for Chenin Blanc, and we found a vineyard site that is organic, that grows the fruit how we like the specifications. It's a very good relationship, and that is where our Chenin Blanc comes from.
Very nice. About how many cases are you producing every year?
We are just under 400. This year, it's a lot less because we did lose our, or what we'll be releasing is a lot less. We lost our fruit in 2020. So, you know, that's a big hit.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
But typically speaking, just under 400.
Was the 2020 due to fire?
Smoke, yep.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, we were in the vineyard. We were tasting the fruit. Everything seemed to be okay. The sky was brown, but the fruit seemed to be okay. Then we did a micro ferment, and it was kind of there, but minimal.
Yeah.
And then we did a second micro ferment, and it was like four times the amount.
Wow.
And, you know, learning from our mistakes, right? Once you harvest, it's a domino effect of what you have to pay for. And it just made more sense for us to not harvest. So that is what we chose to do.
And that was a wise decision. That's unfortunately the life, again, of a farmer, is making decisions that may not seem good for the pocketbook, but really down the road do make sense.
Correct. Correct. Being Cab Franc-centric and having that single clone, single vineyard, where we talk about how it is the expression of the soil, how it is the expression of the climate. Well, what is that expression going to be when smoke is sitting over the vineyard for 2.5 weeks before harvest, right? And, you know, not being a large winery, you know, anything against them, but like an E.J. Gallo, they can purchase that fruit.
Sure.
Because they can blend it into so much larger capacity that smoke level is non-detectable, you know?
Yeah, I know a few winemakers who ended up with, nail polish remover or something like that from their crop, which is really horrifying to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we won't talk about
that. Scary stuff.
Yes, it's very sad. And are these your vineyards? Are you working with your own vineyards? Obviously, you said the Chenin Blanc, but for the Cab Franc?
No, we are true believers of Jack of all trades is a master of none. And we want to be masters of winemaking. So we go out and we have found vineyard owners that believe what we believe. And we have created these relationships with them where we can ask them to green drop if we feel the vines need to green drop. And, you know, can you trim back this or can you do this? And we harvest when we feel our fruit is perfect for harvest. And we are getting very specific fruit. We're not just getting fruit from the vineyard. We are getting specific rows. So we know which fruit is ours, and it's being tended to with our desires in mind.
That's just very cool. Just to think about working with the fruit like that, to me, is kind of blows my mind a bit. Are you the winemakers, or how do you do that?
So we both went to UC Davis and went through the winemaking program, and we are a division of labor. My husband loves organic chemistry. Organic chemistry is the thing that my nightmares are made up of. So the day-to-day chemical analysis, you know, like when we pull a sample and, you know, we need to add this or bring this to that level, all of that is Michael. He does all of that. As for the overall aspect of it, the palate, the, you know, like if we smell something, that's me. Like, you know, we sit down, we blend together, but separately, you know, we're on opposite ends of the table, we're tasting, we're doing the blends. And more often than not, it's my final. He agrees to what I think is the best, but it is definitely a combination of things. So we say he's the true winemaker. I'm the secondary winemaker.
Yeah, well, secondary is kind of a funny word because, you know, it takes a team to do this when you get right down to it. There's, I don't know of any winemakers that I'm aware of that are completely doing it by themselves.
Yeah, no.
Well, kudos to both you guys. And of course, being that it's a marriage, it also makes it for a unique dynamic, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We've learned we do things separate and then come back to collaborate.
Yeah, that's a great way to go. I want to talk a little bit about Abruzzo. I want to say that a little bit better, a little fancier way to say it. Just, again, from my point of view, was a wonderful trip. Really got the feel for it. I am a fan, a huge fan, have been for years, of Montepulciano di Abruzzo. But there were other wines that I got a chance to taste that I really liked. What did you take away from the trip?
First of all, I was blown away by the beauty of the region. That was first and foremost. It was so eye attractive. It just was beautiful. And to see the Adriatic Sea, that was my first impression. Then when we started tasting the wines, I too have been a fan of Montepulciano di Abruzzo for a long time. So it was wonderful to be able to taste the wines where they're actually made. Mm. But what I actually fell in love with the personality is the Cerezuelo, the rosé that they make, the cherry wine,
sure.
So-called, that they say. It just was fun. It was nippy and light, and there were so many different variations of how the wineries made them.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm that weird person when I go on a press trip. Everybody, the main grape is this, and I'm the one who's like, oh, look at this oddball thing. I'm falling in love with this, Again, the Pecorino,
yeah.
It was beautiful. And yeah. So I think it has to do with I'm always about the underdog. Like, Cab Franc is an underdog.
Yes, it is.
Chenin Blanc is an underdog, and so I think I'm always cheering for that underdog. I appreciate the Montepulciano di Abruzzo. It's a beautiful wine. I will drink it. I love it. But hey, let's support these other guys here that don't get quite as much exposure, I think.
Well said. Yeah, in a way, it's also very disappointing because finding these wines that we tasted in my particular part of the country, really virtually impossible. You can find some very inexpensive ones, but not kind of like the ones we tasted, which were just Villamagna, as an example, was just a wonderful area and just tremendous wines.
Yeah, and when you get to taste with the winemakers and hear the passion and see it, it makes it so incredible. But I do, I agree. And I think that's part of what these press trips are trying to ultimately get to is if more of us are talking about the wine,
right,
then maybe they can get more of these wines imported into the United States and into these different areas so that more people can enjoy them.
So hopefully distributors are listening to our conversation. You never know.
Yes.
Really important thing to point out is that you also do, you're really kind of into all kinds of stuff, but you do a podcast as well. You're big into education, which I think is great because the more people learn, obviously, the more they'll try and the more experiment. Tell me a bit about your podcast, which is called Exploring the Wine Glass.
Yes. So I started with writing a blog, mostly for the winery. And at that point, I didn't even know what a blog was. I had to call a college friend and ask what a blog was.
Mm.
And I started doing that, and I did that for years, and I don't know how, but it won several awards. And so that kind of exploded a bit and started taking on its own entity. And as is true fashion for me, when I do something for a while, I'm like, ooh, squirrel, look, what else can I do, And so podcasts, I started listening to podcasts, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. you know, I don't have to, you know, I can write on these days and I can talk on these days and, you know, whatever. And it really started, the podcast really started, I wanted it to be very pathocentric and educational. And so I just started coming up with concepts that would allow me to educate my listeners. So, like, one of them, one of the series is called Winefabet Street. So it's Sesame Street for wine lovers.
Nice.
And each month I just take a different letter, the next letter of the alphabet, and we discuss a grape variety. And, you know, we have special guests come on. Like, we just did last month with Karen Yon. So we had Tana Cole and Greg Burns from Jesse's Grove Winery in Lodi, who's the winemaker and owner. And they came on and they tell the story of Carignan. And we talk about where the history and general characteristics and what you can pair with it and, you know, things like that. And so that's just the podcast has just also evolved into this entity of its own. And I kind of really like it because I get to talk to people and have conversations versus sitting at my computer and typing.
Yeah.
So
that makes a big difference. Well, plus, again, it's education. And, you know, we talk about for Life Between the Vines, our goal is making wine less intimidating. And when people have education, as we well know, education is power, knowledge is power. You're able to go into a tasting room with a degree of confidence and speak with people and ask the questions that you really want to ask without feeling fear, right?
Right. Absolutely. And that's what I try to do. And, you know, for 25 years, I was an educator. When I'm on some other press trips, people are like, oh, my God, you explained that so well. Like, we were in Humia, and they were asking questions, and the language barrier was kind of making it difficult for the winemaker to explain what he was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I was, and I just would break it down for people. And I like to think, and I've been told, that a skill that I have is being able to take a very technical thing and break it down into something that is, doesn't sound so technical anymore so that people can understand. And part of educating people is just finding that connection that they can relate to, whatever that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And you're very approachable, which makes it easy. Again, that's kind of how we hit it off. Obviously, a bunch of wine geeks in a room, you're going to hit it off with a lot of different people. You know, one of the biggest things I hear people saying is they don't like the stuffiness of wine. Well, that brings me to my next question for you. What makes you crazy about the wine business? Now, that could go good, positive, or it could go negative.
Wow. What makes me crazy about the wine business, the wine industry? In terms of, like, the podcast, Exploring the Wine Glass and Thing, I get very frustrated when, do I get frustrated with anything? I'm kind of, my personality doesn't get frustrated. My personality kind of explodes and then I'm done with it. it's like fire, and then, okay, we're done. You know, I guess more so if I'm out tasting or I hear people talk about tasting, I get upset when people are drinking versus tasting.
Mm.
That's very upsetting. Like, if we're out at a winery and we're doing a tasting and then the people next to us are just pounding and then expecting the poor person behind the counter to refill their glass instantaneously. Like, that's, I guess, wine tasting etiquette. And it's not so much that they don't know what to do. It's just they're choosing to not be human.
No, that's fair to say. I would totally agree.
You know,
I'm going to jump in real quick just to give you a comparison. Is I'm a bourbon lover and whiskey and rye and all that. But when I see people do shots, it's disappointing to me because you should enjoy the drink. I'm a sipping whiskey guy. I want to sip it. And
right.
Obviously, that's the same idea with, you know, sipping wine per se, but you're tasting. And to taste these
right.
wonderful things that we've, as human beings, created all these years, to miss that experience and what it brings to a conversation, that's really sad.
I, I never get upset. I always say there's never a stupid question. I'm always happy to answer any question that anybody has. And I don't like that wine is, as you, you know, is viewed as snooty, because I think I am as far from snooty as snooty can be.
I would agree.
And it's upsetting that something that I love so much is viewed as that way. So I think that's what I try so hard to do is, you know, make it. And there's a lot of terminology that goes with wine that can be scary. And I think that's a frustrating thing. Not that people don't know the stuff, but the terminology can be so scary to people.
Yes.
That's upsetting. You know, I wish more people weren't afraid of it.
Well, and again, that's part of our job. So who is your mentor, or whom, or how many people do you have a mentor in this industry?
As I said at the beginning, like, Paso is amazing. And there's so many people in Paso that I feel I could go talk to and ask questions. But when we first got into making wine in Paso, we came across a gentleman named Jeremy Leffert. And I love him. I absolutely adore him. And he was our consulting winemaker when we first started. And being true Jersey people that we are, when we met him, we wanted to make sure that he was going to be a good fit for us. So we brought two bottles of Cab Franc to him, one that we really, really loved and one that we really, really hated. And we just gave him the two bottles and let him talk about the wine and, you know, what his opinion was of the wine and to see if we were a fit or not. Because if you're going to have a consulting winemaker, they have to have a similar palate, because put aside that there is bad wine out there, but different palates like different types of wine. So
sure.
For like Cab Franc, you can have a very bell pepper Cab Franc, a Pirozzini Cab Franc, or you can have a very little Pirozzini Cab Franc. And so if his palate was more towards bell pepper, that wasn't going to be a good match for us.
Yeah, sure.
Because we don't like the bell pepper. So we met him, and it was kismet for me at the very beginning. I absolutely adore him. And to this day, you know, if we have a question, I can just shoot him a text and ask him, you know, hey, this occurred and we quite haven't seen this before. You know, what do you think? And he bats out the answer for us, you know. So he's been very instrumental for us. He is the head winemaker at Tooth & Nail. So, you know, and he consults with several other wineries. But our goal has always been for us to be the winemakers. For, you know, we like to torture ourselves. We want to do everything. We want to be the people behind the tasting room. We want to be the people behind social media. We want to, you know. We've learned, and we know that we can always ask him questions. So I would say he's been our primary mentor within Paso. But again, with the family of Paso, you can ask questions of pretty much anybody there. And we have professors at UC Davis that we can still shoot an email to and ask them questions also.
That's great. From what I see, guests can taste either in Fresno or in Paso, and that's a nice option to be able to have. They can schedule it on the website. And very importantly, what is your website for our listeners?
So our website is Dracena, so Dracaena wines with an S .com.
Excellent. Thank you for spelling that, because the spelling kind of throws you a little bit. I have totally enjoyed this conversation, Lori. Again, it's been a pleasure to meet you. I look forward to a friendship way down the road here, and certainly maybe the chance of seeing you later on this year in person and to do a follow-up interview.
Oh, I hope so.
I do, too. I wish you guys a lot of success, and thanks, most importantly, for taking the time today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on. It's absolutely a joy. And honestly, very thankful, because for people, you know, wineries our size, it really is all about word of mouth. So it's wonderful to have the exposure. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. Learn more by visiting DracenaWines.com or visit her podcast, Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Pascoff. Our web geek is Dan Gisha. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2022.